Broadcasting live from the Sands Expo and Convention Center in Las Vegas for HIM16, it's This Just In. Now here's your host, HIT advisor, Justin Barnes.
Thank you, everybody, for joining, and welcome back. Very excited about our next panel on customized care everywhere, a topic that's actually not being discussed across the show floor. I walked around HIM16 a little bit yesterday, and certainly a little bit more this morning. We don't have this topic covered, and it's so critical to the future of healthcare, so I'm very happy that we're addressing it today. And we have a great panelist. There's six of us total up here right now, but what I'm going to do is hand it over to Gus Vendetto from HIMS, VP of Content. We're going to kind of co-author this panel, just co-moderate it, just because I can take a little bit of a break. This is my sixth hour or so on air. But I appreciate you, Gus, joining us. And then what we're going to do is have everybody introduce themselves around the horn. So I actually want everybody to kind of hear the voice of the audience, of a couple thousand people online listening. So I want them to hear your voice and your name and voice and associate that. So when we kind of bring it back around. And also, I do ask, you know, when you come back on air, that you do announce your name just so everybody can hear, because there are six panelists. Usually we do four, but we went with six today. And actually yesterday it worked really, really well. But Gus, I'll let you take it away here and have them work around the horn and introduce themselves.
Thanks, Justin. We're going to start with John. Introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. John Gresham, Vice President with DeviceWorks, part of Cerner Corporation. Pleasure to be here today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John.
Yes, Andy Hines from LifePoint Health, based out of Nashville, Tennessee. I'm the Senior Director of Information Security.
And I'm Craig Klein. I'm from Red Hat. I'm responsible for Red Hat's healthcare business in North America.
Fantastic.
And I'm Ajay Dholakia. I'm a senior engineering staff member at Lenovo, based out of North Carolina.
Excellent. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, everyone. So let's get into the discussion here. We're going to start with trying to baseline some things and get everybody on, see where they are, and whether we're all on the same page or off different places. So, John, I'll let you start. How would you define cloud? Because cloud computing is
it's a big word for sure.
It's understood by people in very different ways.
Yeah. I typically think of cloud as obviously remote computing, internet-based computing, multi-tenant in nature, scalable in architecture, so it can scale up and down quickly. So elastic, you'll hear people talk about elastic computing, being able to scale up and down based upon demand in the environment. That's kind of how I define cloud. It's kind of matured over the history, traditionally being more application service provider, remote hosting and so forth, and now and those are different ways to deliver solutions and applications over the internet. But when I think of pure cloud, I think of those concepts.
Mm-hmm. So Andy.
Yeah, I would probably add on to that. You know, cloud's been around for a long time, but the advent of marketing, the cloud has become very more known through notoriety through Apple and other things. So a scalability application based only cloud computing versus, you know, the mainstream of data centers and so forth that have you hear more about as, you know, remote hosting and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
From my standpoint, from a technology standpoint, cloud means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So if I look at cloud, it's all about the infrastructure, flexibility, elasticity, agility. So it can be cloud, which would be from a development environment, or it would be developing in a PaaS environment, or cloud, hosting applications and having the ability to be flexible up and down.
So, and Ajay, how do you define cloud?
So for me, I think all of these are very good definitions. What I like to think about it is it's a way of organizing IT that makes life easier both for the cloud provider as well as cloud administrator as well as the cloud user. So this is, we are trying to achieve concepts like agility, multi-tenancy, security, ultimate goal being how do we make life easy for the user of that technology.
So moving on, Craig, how do you define mobility?
I look at mobility as, you know, anything from a digital device that's out there in the marketplace that's going to transfer data back into a back-end system. Mm-hmm. So the mobility piece from a technology perspective is the application that allows you to develop those mobile applications. So mobility could be a lot of different things, but from a Red Hat perspective, mobility is tying those devices back into the back end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ajay, would you agree with that? Or?
Absolutely, and I think it one of the aspects that comes into mobility is you want to continue to do what work or personal activity you are doing as you go through transition through environments. So it could be an office, it could be a clinic, it could be a hospital room, it could be home, it could be car. And what you want to be able to do is not be interrupted, or at least seamlessly be transitioning across these so that you have better ability to complete the task that you're trying to achieve.
So John, the Cerner perspective on mobility?
I would agree with Ajay in the definition. It's we're mobile creatures by nature, and with that, we need to be able to support whatever functions, actions, capabilities we need for that moment in time. And having applications and solutions which support that, you know, certainly mobile devices come to the forefront when you think about that. But we think of it more broadly. In the way that it was described, you can facilitate that through a number of different form factors, technologies, to support that mobile use case.
Mm-hmm. So Andy, with the provider perspective from LifePoint Health.
Yeah, so I think it's a combination of flexibility, be able to provide data as well as from an application standpoint in any place, anywhere. So obviously that comes from great responsibility to ensure that the systems we're putting in front of our users are secure down to, you know, from the application level, if it's just an application or if it's a private network that you're receiving services from. So, you know, that's one of the things that we really look at a lot from a solutionary standpoint, whether it's an application cloud product or an individual private network that we're getting hosted from.
Yes. We'll go to Ajay to move to the next question here, which is security. How do you define security in the healthcare spectrum?
I think that's, in my mind, security is a layered construct. It starts to include the ability for a user or a patient or a clinician who is providing the care to be able to interact with each other, exchange data, be authenticated that they are the people that data belongs to, for example. So what you want to be defining security is an environment that lets these types of authentication and an exchange of data, ultimately leading to better care, be enabled. And that, in my mind, would be the ultimate goal for a secure healthcare environment.
Yeah. So John, what do you think?
So when I think about security and in healthcare, typically in the past, it's been this balance of do you provide a better user experience, or do you make the environment more secure? I think given the importance of PHI, our information as consumers, and wanting to make sure that's secure, we can't balance those two anymore. So we have to be able to facilitate having highly secure, highly trusted systems that can facilitate the sharing of that information, the data, and ensure that at the center, the person's information is secure.
And Craig, what do you think?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, security is all about protecting PHI. I mean, there's different areas of security if you look at it from a HIPAA perspective. But I think why security is so important these days is if you look at where healthcare is going in terms of changing the connectivity that has to happen to be able to do value-based care and those type of things, it's going to become more and more important to make sure things are secure. So it's about securing all the different devices to make sure you can do this communication and be able to protect that at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I could probably go on for the next 30 minutes and talk about just security from a standpoint of applications to, you know, mobile devices to all the different controls, definitely defense and layers, down to cybersecurity and the vendors that we partner with that provide those services from a cloud standpoint. I think, you know, 5 years ago, the industry standpoint is much different in the services that are being brought and the investments that some of the cloud providers, and especially in healthcare, that folks are starting to emphasize and increase some of the spending to ensure that everyone's data that is in these systems is secure. So it's very exciting to see that the importance is kind of being drawn out right now from the market. Unfortunately, the market is learning through all the breaches from the cyber events. But I think from an education and awareness standpoint of allowing folks to understand why the security things, you know, when HIPAA went in place in 96, and where we are today, why we're performing the actions with multi-factor authentication and the remote access, and be able to explain that to providers and understand the importance of why we're doing these things. So there's definitely a lot of upside and a lot of room for improvement.
Thanks, guys. This is Justin again. So, and thank you, Gus, for leading the kind of the level set. I think it's very important for us to all get on the same page regarding mobility and security and certainly cloud. So now shifting into kind of customized care and diving into this topic specifically, and also for anybody out in the Twitter sphere, for all the listeners out there, you can go to HIMS Radio, hashtag HIMS Radio on Twitter, and actually see a live picture of the panel out there. So all the handsome faces that are on the stage right now. But again, as we're diving into the panel here, where can provider organizations start with creating a customized care strategy? I mean, it can be a daunting task, and I'm sure it's complex for some people, but also let's give some people some actionable intelligence or good next steps. So, Andy, let's start off with you from your perspective. Where's a good place to start for a customized care strategy?
You know, I think it goes back to understanding the workflows within the provider setting to really optimize, get the business requirements of what you're trying to achieve and how to better provide better outcomes from a quality standpoint. So those are the areas probably from a focus standpoint is really around quality.
Craig, what are your thoughts?
Well, that's not really my area of expertise, but from my standpoint, customized care, to be able to do customized care properly, it's all based on information.
Yep.
So you have to have good information to decide what you're going to do. So again, it gets back to connecting all the endpoints to make sure this information is tied back together.
Excellent point, yeah.
So if you have the information tied together, you can do the analytics on it to make the right decisions.
That's fantastic. AJ, so from a standpoint of, you know, what do you think and where to start for creating a customized care strategy?
So I think the ultimate goal, again, ties back to mobility. And a patient has a kind of a life cycle, if you will, or a progression through that care in terms of initial diagnosis to providing some on-site care and potentially continuing that when the patient is back in the home environment. So the customization of care has to travel through these domains, if you will. And so one of the ways to start out is to make sure that we have in the primary, the hospital or clinic type setting, the appropriate infrastructure and data access available. Mobility is something to leverage there because the care providers, there may be one, there may be multiple, there may be one day, 1 hour, or multi-day event, whatever the case may be. You want to be able to have that data available and then seamlessly transition it to the steps that are coming through. So start out where you are currently most comfortable and then
Excellent.
Build it out.
Yeah. That's fantastic. John, for DeviceWorks?
Yeah, so when we think about customized care, you could look at that from two viewpoints. Mm-hmm. for the patient and the person. Yeah. How is the environment? And that's going to be very important as we look at the future of care and as more transparency and more ownership and accountability for our health extends. How do you take data and infuse data, as was said by the other panelists, in a secure manner to provide context, to bring more intelligent information to the surface more quickly for those users. Also, from the provider or clinician perspective, when I think about customized care, I think about breaking down the data silos that exist in the traditional acute and ambulatory environments. That can be everything from your bedside medical devices that may exist in the environment and the network and the systems that communicate there to the EMR or EHR systems and other imaging systems, and how do you facilitate the sharing of that information in a more seamless fashion? So think Internet of Things. Mm-hmm. And Internet of Medical Things, and how do we facilitate the sharing of that data real time to be able to start to do more intelligent things with it. So be able to start to facilitate a different experience and a customized experience, whether mobile or whether on a desktop, depending upon the form factor that makes sense for that setting, to have it customized to that provider.
So just kind of a little bit of a follow-up. This show over the last couple of days is looking for best practices and actionable intelligence of where people can start, because some of these are fairly large undertakings, no matter what the size of the organization. So I'll throw it out there for anybody here, and we even start off with UAJ, what would be a best practice that you've seen on creating a customized care strategy? Where could someone, what do you think there?
So I think I'm going to pick up on what John said. You separate out the perspective. So is it the provider perspective or is it the patient perspective? And I think that provides a clean starting point. What you want to do is make sure that from a provider point of view, one care provider or a team of care providers are all able to collaborate, come together, not necessarily physically,
right,
through the use,
yeah,
of technology, in a way that makes that patient receive care faster than would be possible if you're only doing it by having everybody together at the same place. I think that's a good place to start. And then from a patient point of view, would be, I would say at the moment, it's an education. You have to learn about some of these technologies to get comfortable. That flow of information is happening. So I think that would be the next step to go drive forward. How do we make the patient more aware and educated about getting that customized care?
William, Beth, want to jump in here for some best practices that you've seen?
I think it starts, obviously, if you take the provider perspective for a moment, it starts with baselining what are your value outcomes you're trying to achieve. I think sometimes we lose sight of that. We see lots of technology out there and we want to implement that, but we lose sight at times of the valued outcomes we're trying to achieve. And many times that's not just achieved through technology, it's achieved through process change and other things you need to do for your organization to facilitate the use of that. In regards to getting started, it would be breaking down those data silos. So if, for instance, if you're not doing anything with device connectivity in your environment, how can you begin to get that data out of those devices that are in your environment or maybe on a patient's wrist with their Fitbit or Garmin? How do you get that data into your environment and start to facilitate the transaction of data? How do you integrate your systems? Most provider systems have already integrated those systems, but it's those disparate surrounding solutions. Those would be the one recommendation. And then the other is care team communication. How are you going to facilitate the care team of today and the care team of tomorrow? And the care team of tomorrow is going to cross the continuum of care. And how are you going to facilitate that from a communication standpoint? I think those are two key points.
Andy, I'd love any thoughts that you have from LifePoint.
Yeah, so you know, I agree with what he's saying 100%. And I think one of the big things is to be able to be engaged in that process, particularly from a security perspective, understanding what are the pain points that are, you know, driving the change. And from a security standpoint, obviously, with mobility, solutions that we put in the hands of the providers and clinicians, that we're putting it in a way that's been implemented securely and being part of the overall success plan you're laying out for your organization. So definitely understanding the requirements and kind of wrapping security around it. And I think educating folks at the same time what the risks are, the trade-offs, if there are any, from a decision standpoint.
That's excellent. Craig, any best practices you think of? Or?
I completely agree with what they're saying. I think one of the things that I see that happens a lot, you see people that have bad systems or, you know, bad things that they're doing,
yeah,
and they think that they apply technology to those situations, it's going to fix it.
Completely agree.
Unless you have your systems and your house in order, applying technology is just masking what the problem is. So you have to make sure that you fix the underlying problem first before you apply the technology. Because if you do it in the wrong order, you won't get the right results.
It's almost like having a baby to save a marriage. You hear that analogy,
right,
out there.
Right.
Goodness gracious. But actually, to follow up on even what you said, though, a best practice that one of the nurses from New York Presbyterian, she actually had nursing and informatics there, was my guest earlier today, and she had a fantastic best practice that they do every single year. They look at what they've implemented over the year for new processes or workflows, and they see what can they pull off, because and a lot of technologies layer on and layer on and layer on, but you never take a look back holistically.
Right.
What can we peel off? How can we simplify it? Every single year going back to say, what, you know, we made changes, and sometimes you make changes on the fly really fast. And so you don't realize that you've complicated things, or then you layered on top of it. And now she said, we go back and look at all of our processes and what can we simplify? And every single year we do that.
Yeah, part of the problem, and you see this all the time when you install systems, is people go in and install systems and they're still doing processes that they don't really need to do anymore.
Right.
And they need to be able to say, okay, if I'm going to use the technology, let's make sure I have those covered. And what can I offload? That's the best way to use it.
Very true.
Yeah, and this is Ajay. So to add on to that, there's a flip side also. You may find people rushing, as you were saying, that just because we now have rolled out a new technology, I don't need to do these process steps.
Right.
And so, you know, there is equal danger in going down, pegging the needle all the way on the other side. So
yep,
really driving that transformation and that change mentality is the key to this being successful.
I'm glad he brought up this, John. I'm glad he brought up the change management process. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we're trying to adopt is more of a mindset of almost taking the agile development processes, of continuous advancement of development process and applying those to IT system processes. And so how can you start to really not think of it as I need that next big upgrade to get that piece of functionality, but always be in a continuous advancement mode? I like your analogy of peeling it off.
Yeah.
I think that's important as part of that continuous advancement, but it's not, it shouldn't be these big stair steps.
Right.
It should be a more gradual, and we have to, with cloud-based computing and some of those concepts, with mobility and the way those applications are deployed, those will better support the way software is delivered and how we think about continually advancing our environments to support the care processes that we want to affect the outcome.
I agree.
Of. Yeah.
So I wonder if you could talk about how you coordinate between the clinical, the workflow, the human side of it, and then the technology side, because John, you were talking about really managing technology development, but then within the hospital, the workflows change. Technology sometimes is faster than the ability of the staff to handle it. So Craig or Andy, you've had experience with this?
Yeah, so I would say that it's definitely a complicated process, because a lot of folks have to be involved from a technology infrastructure standpoint to a business leader that's saying there's a new technology, security, privacy, legal. Definitely being engaged throughout the process of if it's a new application, if it's going to be hosted, or if it's going to be in the cloud, and kind of vetting the overall process. Obviously, the larger your environment becomes, and more folks are wanting to move quickly, it can be challenging to, be able to provide very fast feedback on whether a product's secure or whether if it's, from a cost standpoint. So all those different items are reviewed and evaluated to be able to provide hopefully the right outcome decision.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that's maturing, I would say, every day within our organization. We continue to keep going on that path.
So John, have you had experience with this or offer any tips?
Yeah, I mean, some of the tips is just kind of defining what is your model experience that you want to, we use that term, that is a certain term, but what is your model experience that's going to deliver that key valued outcome, and trying to standardize around that, both from a process standpoint as well as your applications. And with many organizations, how many hospitals do you have?
72.
72 at LifePoint. So how do you define the same way to handle certain clinical scenarios and develop a model across those systems? But even if you're not running the same technology, I think that's important, and that's very valuable in the process.
Mm-hmm. Ajay, what have you seen in your experience?
So I think part of the balancing act that we have to do is technology is expected to hide the complexity. Some of that complexity is in the technology of the previous generation, but a lot of it is also in the interactions with that technology. So taking that step of education use, and I like the term you said, the model experience, so that you are setting some metrics. That helps us, for example, from a device or infrastructure design perspective, from middleware and software perspective, that that whole collection of the system stack has to come together and allow us to meet and check those metrics. So, back to the point of, yes, we can hide the complexity, but it's only hidden in as much as it is, the awareness of that has transitioned to the user so that they can go bring that model experience to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that point needs to be at the center of driving any of these transformations.
Mm-hmm. So Andy, with mobility, we're getting more data. Care coordination is designed to learn from all that data and help us adapt and improve systems. Is that happening? Are we getting overwhelmed with all the data?
So I'm a big fan of the data. Sport and watch, gathering Apple Health data.
Points to wrist, yes.
Yeah. I think over time, I think that, in my opinion, that's probably going to probably mature in whether your physician can trust that information, whether it's the blood pressure pump or for your heart pressure. Blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
And the Wi-Fi scales that can connect in. So there's a lot of Internet of Things that I'm excited about. I personally use, I've got a bed that has the heart rate monitor and
yes.
You can see your sleep number. So I think those things are all going to evolve. I'd be interested to hear your feedback on that.
Yeah, John. Yeah. How, sir, I'm sure you support everything.
Yeah, we support it. I think, so I talked about device connectivity and the importance of being able to get data off. The next step that the industry is really needs to solve for is, how is the provider going to utilize and visualize that information? How is the organization going to, are you going to have your steps every day go into the electronic record? Do you want that data in that electronic record, part of your permanent record, or do you want to just visualize it there? I think those are concepts we still have to work through. Certainly you want to be able to view those in your personal health portals and view, but what does the provider see and what does the organization allow to be entered into that record without some sort of process to facilitate that? But it's definitely a must to be able to get that data to get more intelligent insights into how we can begin to start to more proactively manage health.
Yeah. So Craig, I know Red Hat knows how to deal with data. That's what you provide, you know, managing large data sets.
Well, you go back to the mobile question. I mean, if you look at mobile, one of the challenges you have with mobile is if you do start to hook everything up from, you know, whether it be spirometers or heart rate monitors or what you have, you end up with so much data. So how much data do you really need to keep? So you end up either with a complete data storage nightmare, or you have to look at it and say, okay, what can I deal with and what do I really have to make the correct decisions? So if you look at the bigger picture in healthcare, as they try to drive to always value-based care plans, it gets into how do we drive down cost. And the only way we can drive down cost is to be able to know what the outcomes are going to be. And the only way to know what the outcomes are is to see what's actually happening out there. And it's a big leap. We have to get there.
So Ajay, I'll throw it to you, because at Healthcare IT News, we know our readers find analytics to be one of the most important topics. They're now focused on getting the analytics, getting the intelligence out of it. How do people take that next step? Are we there where we know the intelligence, or are we still developing the questions to ask?
I think it's a evolving process. So it's going to be continuous learning. The algorithms that go behind handling of that deluge of data that is coming from all these sensors that we are all talking about, it needs to be staged in a way that is most meaningful for the purpose that it's being collected. Mm-hmm. So you know, whether it's being done right at the first aggregation point, whether it's being put into large repositories and would be analyzed overnight for use down the road, you know, there's that whole continuum that's in between. Mm-hmm. And we have to find the right algorithms that are going to be driving that, and that will be coupled by the expectation, so the experience that is intended. What I find interesting also is that it's not just, not just technology. There are issues of who has control over that data. So is it that the patient is going to be able to set the dial on alert me when this and this happens, or is it going to be the care provider? And really, how does that handshake take place? So there is again a lot of small continuous evolution that has to be taking place. Mm-hmm. I mean, analytics is here to stay, no question, but it'll come in incremental steps.
Right. Yeah. John, what do you think the next step is with adopting all this analytic data?
Yeah, so one is we have to aggregate all this data. We have to normalize it. We have to transform it to be able to begin to rely upon it, trust it, and have a mechanism to continually clean the data, manage that data, and then from there you can begin to build out based upon what your value metrics you're trying to achieve. You can begin to use that data more intelligently. So definitely here to stay. I think without having defined use cases that you're trying to address, or, you know, I want to drive down, you know, diabetes in my population. I think as those at-risk models and the reimbursement models continue to change, it'll drive the need to be able to get to that data in a more seamless fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we kind of think about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, from that whole, everything out here, I think, is about analytics. It's huge at HIMSS. I think it's still really maturing and, you know, taking in that data and seeing how you can actually consume it and work through it. But at the end of the day, it really comes back to, you know, problem solving, you know, actually getting into the hands of the providers, the clinicians, to actually use that data for better outcomes, for better quality. So I think that's where the evolution will probably go, and that's the things that we're going to work on.
Yeah, and I would think, well, it seems like we're really in maybe the first inning of a ball game with analytics.
Well,
everyone's shaking their head, yes.
Yeah.
This is John. One thing I would add is, what's key is how do you get it back into the workflow?
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to do all this analytics, it's great retrospective, but how do you get to real-time analytics? How do you get to delivering that back into the workflow to actually impact the things that you're trying to impact? Because when they're retrospective, it's a little bit harder to change that behavior and drive a different behavioral change. And so that's a key part. As we start to see more emerging standards like Smart on Fire, I think that'll help facilitate the ability to drive those analytics back into the clinical workflow process.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of On Fire, and another big topic, and I don't know if we'd have time to get too far into it, but interoperability, I mean, that does seem to be a key theme here at the show. ONC had some announcements, the Secretary of Human Services, Burwell, made some announcements. Cerner, I'm sure, feels they're up to it.
Yes.
Yes. Ajay, what do you see with interoperability? Are we also in the first inning or the second inning?
Yeah, I think we are maybe not far beyond that. So between around that time, first to second inning. What I like that Secretary Burwell, the HHS Secretary, said yesterday is that patients are telling their story through the data. Now, that data is being captured at different points of contact in so many different formats under so many different systems. Part of that drive forward is going to have to bring in interoperability. The analogy that comes to my mind is, manually driving a car or flying a plane to now all automated, computer generated. So a lot of analytics went behind the scene to enable that type of automation to come in. And I think we are at the beginning stages of that within healthcare. So slowly that automation will come to be seen as helping the care provider and the patient as opposed to overwhelming them. So still at the beginning.
Well, Andy, at LifePoint, are all your 72 hospitals at LifePoint, right?
That's
completely
correct.
Interoperable, every bit of data available to every doctor at any time.
You're supposed to say yes.
Yeah.
You can. That's a continued area that we're looking at. You know, we're a growing healthcare company, so every hospital or practice that comes on board, we have to take a look at those and understand those workflows and how we can optimize those and how it looks in the entire ecosystem. So that is the end goal at some point, but right now there's a varying level of interoperability.
Right, yes.
Here, let's actually, because I actually want to shift a little bit also, because you mentioned the patient a little bit before, and I kind of want to dive into the patient a little bit. So with a customized care strategy, what is the value to the patient? Because, this is at the center of all this is the patient. So let's transition a little bit over to that component of the conversation. So, AJ, you brought up the patient first, so let's go ahead.
So I think in my mind, what's happening is we are shifting from the model of, and that probably is a bit along the way of that, the provider or the doctor knows best, to a collaboration between the patient and the care provider. And that's driven by that data which is describing whatever it is that they are talking about. So from a patient perspective, the real challenge is when that degree of comfort, right? Is this the right next step? Is this the right set of next engagements to go look for? Do I trust? And education will play a lot of role in there. Technology will play a lot of role in there. Hiding of that complexity through technology, as I mentioned, will play a lot of role in there. But I think that mindset shifting is happening. Now we have to back it up by the proper technology and processes that we need to make it real.
Craig, do you have any thoughts there on the value to the patient?
To make it valuable to the patient, they have to have information, so you have to go back to interoperability,
right? Yep.
And if you look at interoperability, we were talking about analytics. I don't think we've seen the technology yet that's really going to be able to drive where we need to go. If you look at, for instance, if you're looking at from a patient perspective, some of the things I think you're going to see in analytics, which are just starting to hit the market, is doing analytics based on genomic sequencing.
Yeah.
So not just taking the person's genome, but actually the sequence, which is what the real benefit is. So if you know what that is and you can do analytics, you really get an understanding of what you really can set protocols for for that particular patient. And the same thing with interoperability. Interoperability, if you look for years and years and years, it's gotten more and more complex. The tools that are out there to do it are not going to make it to the complex that we have to get. So they've got to apply new tools. But these tools, as we get into a more consumer-centric environment, which would be around the patient, these tools must be in a place where they can apply business rules of these things and other functions from a technology standpoint that'll actually give the patient the information that they want to see where they can make decisions and maybe even see what the cost of some of these things are.
That's a good, very good point. Andy, from your perspective, LifePoint.
Yeah, I think it comes back to quality and outcomes. You know, what's in it for the patient, you know, down to the care you provide, be able to share, you know, the things that need to be taking place, you know, when they get there, they go into a portal and understand the records. And I think that's where, it, you know, eventually it'll come with folks, you know, as the mobility of devices and understanding the better ways to take care of themselves to prevent them from having to go back into the care setting. So I think it really comes around education, you know, the patient, consumer.
John?
So when we think about the patient and the customized experience, you really need a system that knows me.
Right.
So, and you're only going to be able to know me by having access to my data and me granting you access to that data. And so this concept of consent and how do we think of the care team differently in the future? Because the care team's going to be my wife. It might be someday soon my children,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
And so that care team has to extend beyond just the continuum in the traditional acute setting and be able to facilitate the communication of care in a more customized manner. But it comes down to you have to have systems and applications that know me, and you have to have reimbursement models that incent me.
Right.
And we're just now starting to see that. And things, as we take on more of that responsibility and employers take on more of that responsibility and try to drive down the cost of their care, knowing their employee population, knowing who your at-risk population will become increasingly important, and obviously analytics plays a key role in that.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it seems that in the last few years we've been talking a lot about patient engagement, and a lot of the effort went into portals. Try to get the patient to connect to the doctor, the hospital, or the portal. And, you know, it didn't happen, and in my experience, it's because no one really took the time to figure out what would the patient really want from that portal. Maybe you could look at your appointments, but you couldn't make an appointment in most cases. Maybe you could see your medical records, but only so far. So is that effort over? I mean, John, you know, it's Cerner, do you think we have to move on? Do we need a completely different model to engage that patient?
No, I think we were early. I think the sophistication or lack of sophistication of the systems to be able to support scheduling your own system. It's known that if you can self-schedule your own appointment, you're going to increase the frequency of those folks making those appointments. So it's good for the provider, it's good for the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to do a virtual video visit straight out of your portal, I think technology has come a long way. Cloud-based computing has come a long way to be able to support new capabilities. You see a lot of them on the floor here that you can embed in your portal experiences to make it more powerful and actually make it valuable to go out there and manage your health and manage your care through those systems.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Ajay, what do you think?
So I think one of the areas that we will see where this notion of patient perspective extends to that care team, particularly family and friends, and all of us have had those experiences of needing to care for somebody. Now, you come into these moments where you wish they had done this or that or the other a year ago or a week ago or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I think the data and the analytics and the ability to access things through portals or devices that we are enabling is important. But it also provides a new mindset, a new conversation, a new setting where we would be able to leverage that.
Yes.
And I think that's what will be the catalyst which will drive.
And you know, on to that point, you know, there's some very encouraging developments, I think, and it's over the last few months coming from President Obama, understanding that maybe the HIPAA laws prevented the use of patient data, and we heard it here today at the conference yesterday in the ONC sessions, discussion about from Lisa Savage, Director of Security, that we need to educate and really have more of a discussion about what security really means, and are we actually overly protective, and HIPAA is preventing people from getting data that's really theirs and they should have, and maybe that's been part of the problem. I mean, Andy, do you see that?
Yeah, so that it's an interesting topic because, you know, HIPAA is about privacy, and really not sharing that data, and then you have the total extreme of sharing data with HIEs and other collaborative means to share with other hospitals, and the privacy realm of, you know, having that data and the responsibilities that come along with it. So I do think that, you know, over time, folks will probably acknowledge that it is, in order for the systems to mature, be able to provide that data in real time, you know, some of those things will have to loosen up. But at the same time, it takes great responsibility for folks to take care of that data. So,
yeah, it's true.
It's a tricky subject.
The provider is taking on a great responsibility as being the guardian of this data, and it seems like the government has spent the last few years hitting them over the head to make sure they knew that, but the possibility of fines. But now, maybe the pendulum went too far, didn't it, that we're keeping the patient from the data and we're preventing them from being engaged because of that.
Yeah, I think it's one of the challenges, you know, if you go into a hospital and you have, you know, all the questionnaires you fill out, and the caretakers ask you over and over, you know, the different the drugs you're on, any medications or other. So I think it's something that over time and systems will have a big play in that as hospitals mature, and then be able to integrate that as, you know, if you go to a different healthcare entity, to be able to have that data in real time from a health informatics standpoint exchange.
Craig, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at trying to present a portal information to a patient, if you were talking earlier that you have, what, 6 or 7 or 10 different systems, I know everyone's trying to make one integrated system, but that's going to take a while to get there. So I think it's important from a patient perspective to be able to put a wrap around from a technology standpoint, to be able to tie all the systems together. As healthcare grows, people are becoming larger and larger and larger. So hospital systems are getting bigger and things like that. So there's going to be multiple systems out there. So if you want to be consistent to your patients throughout your complete healthcare system, it's important to put a wrap around these systems and be able to tie them together to make it much easier for that information to be consistent. You also need to pull in information from other people that may not be in the healthcare system themselves, whether it be maybe outside labs or whatever. So it's putting a wrapper around and a way to interoperate all this stuff together that is usable for the patient, which is a big leap.
And if you do that, I imagine it helps with software development, and it helps develop new applications. At Ajay, at Lenovo, you work in that area. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that provides us a lot of input from driving that innovation. So, you know, understanding the challenges that the technology is being designed to address is going to be key. And so we have to drive that in. One example would be, you know, in system design, we talk about things like predictive failure alerts, and we talk about preventive technologies and steps. We do those for the infrastructure itself. It seems like, you know, similar types of technological progress is coming in now when you bring in the data, when you bring in the analytics, when you create these kind of ability to drive these engagements between the care provider and the care team and the patient. Right. So I think we are really excited about making sure whatever the device or the data center spectrum that we need to address, we take these inputs and deliver on those from our perspective.
Right. Yeah, having access to that data, it's secure, and knowing you can have it where you need it.
We can build in that security into the system so that the next layers, the middleware, the application, and then ultimately the user can rely upon that from the ground up.
Right. And more innovative applications in using it.
So what I'll do here, because we're closed probably the next 10 minutes or so, but we'll take a little card from yesterday. Tom Sullivan, one of our partners here at HIMSS Media, came up with a great question. So I'm going to ask this run around the horn. And actually, I'll start with you, Gus, for this question. What's a bold prediction that you might throw out there in the next 12 to 18 months that we might see in the industry? So I'll go to everybody, but start off with you, Gus.
You're going to start seeing people trying, at least, it may not be successful, to apply artificial intelligence to the day-to-day, the primary care visit, mm-hmm. in an effort to really take the first step. And I think it'll be controversial. I think it will be rejected by many people, and you know, a lot of people don't want to see it, but there's a growing body of people who believe that artificial intelligence does have a role to play, and it will come in not on a grand scale of trying to cure cancer from genomic data, but it will come in around the idea of helping to reduce the number of office visits over the common cold. So
that's fantastic.
Within 18 months.
That's great. AJ?
So I would agree. I think that's a really good prediction. From a different perspective, what I see happening is the use of various devices and potentially coming together of some of these. Right now we have 5 or 7 or 10, you know, depending on the type of monitoring you're trying to do. A natural tendency would be to say, how can some of these be brought together? And I think my prediction is going to be that in the next 18 months to 2 years time frame, we will begin to see these type of multi-function devices coming in. And that's what we are excited to contribute from a Lenovo perspective. I think that's going to be really exciting for both us as vendors, but for ultimately the patients.
That's fantastic. Craig?
I think in the next couple of years, with what the reimbursement models look like today, I think you're going to have to see some more standardization around interoperability, interoperability standards being pushed by the federal government, because I think that's really the only way it's going to occur. And with those interoperability standards, you're going to have data is beginning to become even more important than it is today. As I mentioned earlier, I think you can start to apply some different types of data within the data we're capturing today, whether it be genomics or whatever, that really turn the industry on its head, mm-hmm. that allow us to make decisions on items we never thought about before, that are much more definitive decisions. You may see a much more proliferation of digital imaging, so you can actually read images without having to look at them.
Yeah.
And things like that, that will really start to reduce the cost of healthcare, because it can't continue like it is, and it's got to go down. So I think those things will happen.
Yeah, I had standards. We had it as a big topic yesterday. I led off, or my second guest yesterday was John Holomka. So we talked a lot about standards. Certainly fire came up. But then in closing, I had Anish and Farzad coming up right after him. And John wanted me to ask Farzad, do we need any more regulation? And I think, and then I actually asked Karen Salvo as well, closing yesterday, about some regulation in that area. And I think everybody's willing to, they're still holding, seeing if the private sector can actually begin
I can give you some regulation we needed to remove, yeah. Maybe add some in the right areas.
There you go.
We'll leave that for another
How
day.
Long would that take?
Administrative simplification, exactly. Excellent. But I think they're going to hold a little bit longer, but I don't doubt that we could see some further regulation in that area. Andy?
I'll kind of touch on from a security standpoint, but going from a compliant to a more security-mindsetted framework, healthcare, the threats are increasing. You hear about ransomware, you hear about...
It was also interesting that it happened like a week and a half before we came to HIM 16. I mean, that was, yeah. Their timing was...
So it's, you know, it's prolific, and yeah. The bad guys continue to keep up the fight. And I think, you know, the National Health, ISACs, the other information sharing organizations out there starting to pull their information together and actually be able to defend and make the right investments on the right solutions. And if it's, you know, cloud solutions that you're particularly looking at, making sure that those partnerships have invested in security as much as the overall organizations that you're at. So I think that's where we're headed. I think more solutions are obviously going to go into the cloud.
Yeah.
But I think,
yeah.
it's to be able to understand the processes of vendor partners or solution providers to better understand what they're investing in security standpoint, so that way we can ensure that our patients' information is secure.
That's fantastic. John, a bold prediction?
You said bold.
Bold, so, yeah. Bold.
I've been thinking about that one. So I do want to comment before I come back to the bold prediction.
Yeah,
I want to comment,
sure.
A little on the data interop. Less of a bold prediction, but I do think the private sector is going to figure it out. I think with Commonwealth, yep. and some of the other formations, I think you're going to see with clients like LifePoint that have so many different systems they're acquiring and consolidating, the need to connect those systems is going to explode, and we continue to see consolidation in the market, and I think that's going to drive the private sector to figure out how to do this. I think certainly government can help speed that, but I do see that's going to occur in the next 12 to 18. As far as other bold predictions is, I think the speed at which we move to personalized genomics-based medicine, just with the technology and the speed of technology that's occurring, I think that's going to happen more quickly than we think that it's, and be more relevant in the clinical care process faster than we think that's going to, that it may take.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah. And in full transparency, I'm a co-founder of Commonwealth, so a big supporter of what they're accomplishing. And
as are we.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So I love it. So I kick it over back over to you, Gus, for maybe one final question. I've got one question after that, but you have one final question for our group, and then we got about 6-7 minutes or so.
Oh, okay. Who's going to win the election? No.
We did bring it up yesterday. Yesterday was Super Tuesday, so we couldn't. And we had to put it on the table. And but yeah.
Yes. So
maybe if Peyton Manning is going to announce his retirement.
That's the other big question. We already know what Mitt Romney was talking about. He talked about it earlier today. And I think on the national level, I mean, the ACA would be a big change. And we still hear it on the, you know, what always surprises me is how you listen to the politicians at presidential level, they talk about this, and it doesn't seem to faze anybody within this industry. One way or another, we're going to continue to treat patients, and it always amazes me that how little it actually affects the development and the planning of people within healthcare.
Excellent. So I guess real quickly, to kind of, what I like to do, also get some color out to the audience. This is a goal to reach 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 10,000 people out there on a daily basis that's not here in Las Vegas for the conference. So walk around the horn. What's your maybe one or two primary goals and kind of go around the horn here? So for you, John, to come to HIM 16, what was your goal?
Primary goal?
Yeah.
It's, the first one is always to see where the market's at and listen to the providers. What are they looking for?
Yeah.
Certainly you can glean from just walking around and seeing everything. Population health is a big topic and analytics is a big topic, but hearing what our organizations are struggling with and need help with, or where they're excelling and where we can help excel more quickly, that's really the main goal of HIMSS.
That's fantastic. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
It's a great place. There's so many opportunities to understand new technologies, not just from a security standpoint, but obviously from a application healthcare standpoint, and it's growing every year. That I've been to. So yeah, it's always exciting. Always tons of new things to learn and opportunities.
43,000 people running around. There's a lot of energy here.
Indeed.
So
yeah, from my standpoint, it's trying to find out what the latest greatest technologies are that are out there. There's always new people.
Yes.
That a lot of them are different names, but same people.
Yeah.
But again, it's trying to figure out where our technology fits in what's going on with the market, number one. I know from our standpoint, it's also networking. Pretty much a majority of the people that are at HIMSS are customers of ours.
Yeah.
So it's getting a chance to meet with them and see them all in one location and see where they're going and where we can help them. And I've been to HIMSS, I don't know how many years in a row. I've been in healthcare IT for 35 years. So it's kind of it's an annual event, just like the holidays. So.
Exactly. Yeah, this is my 16th HIMSS, so I agree. It's kind of old home week. We come back together again. AJ?
So I'm a novice in that perspective. This is the first time I'm at HIMSS. Of course, Lenovo team has been coming out here. For me, I brought with me some key questions around big data, analytics, and Internet of Things. How are these technologies being adopted or at least looked at from the perspective of healthcare? And it has been a drinking from the fire hose type of experience, talking to all the things that are out there. Now, whether they really get into the care domain tomorrow, it remains to be seen, but at least people have put them out there and, we will address the challenges we will, but I think I'm taking back with me a whole load of new information that will keep us busy for a while.
Yeah. And Gus, what would you?
Well, when we come to HIMSS on the way, we know we're going to see a lot of technology, over 1,000 exhibitors and over 300 educational sessions. So you know you're going to see a lot of different solutions. And what I want to do is I want to hear what the providers, the real people who deploy it, what they really think. And one of my favorite things to do is be at the end of a session and as everyone's walking out, hear what they're saying about that session. Because, you know, what do they really think when they see it? And that tells us what's going to happen in the next year.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree more. Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for the panel today. Customized Care Everywhere, you guys were terrific. And we'll follow up here shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good, everybody. Stay tuned. We're actually going to bring up the Venture Plus Forum winner. So, Howard Bird, you guys can come on up onto our stage, and we'll go ahead and begin here. So, everybody on the radio out there in the hemisphere, hang tight. We're going to bring our next guests up and learn who the Venture Plus Forum for 2016 is. Very excited.